Welcome to the second episode of our Savannah podcast series. We're Mike and Jürgen from the travel blog for 91 Days, and we hope you're excited to travel with us again back to Savannah to learn more about this eccentric city in Georgia. If so, just put on your headphones, sit back, and join us as we continue to explore this jewel of the U.S. South. The heroic genius of to-go cups. Now, just to make absolutely sure, you're saying that you'll put my beer in a cup and then I can walk around outside, in front of cops, and there will be no problems? The bartender was growing exasperated with me. Yes, dude, for the 100th time, yes, you're golden. I just couldn't believe it. It was our first weekend in Savannah, and people were walking around on the streets and sidewalks, sipping beers. Outside. I mean, I'd seen Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil and to-go cups had been mentioned in city guides. But somehow, the glorious reality of it hadn't really clicked in my brain. The idea of legally walking around downtown in broad daylight with an open container was simply too good to be true. Savannah is one of just a handful of cities in the USA with this law, or rather, lack of a law. There are just two simple rules. One, the cup must be plastic. And two, you must be in the historic district, anywhere north of Jones Street. The To-Go Cup is a Savannah institution and one we would make persistent use of. Oglethorpe and Tomochichi, Savannah's bestest buddies. James Oglethorpe is the founder of Georgia, born in Godalming, Surrey, England. He made his name as a soldier and eventually became a member of Parliament, where he successfully lobbied for the creation of a 13th colony, foreseen as a buffer to protect the lucrative Carolina colonies from Spanish Florida. Oglethorpe arrived in 1732 and got right to work establishing his new colony. First item of business? Land. The smallish Yamacraw tribe occupied the territory of present-day Savannah, but rather than the good old slaughter and seize, Oglethorpe chose to negotiate for the territory's purchase. He was an inherently fair person and had soon built a close personal friendship with the natives' leader, Chief Tomochichi. Luckily for the Paleskins, Tomochichi was unusually open to newcomers, eager to help out the fledgling colony and have his people educated in the British style. He aided negotiations with the mistrustful Creek tribe and accompanied Oglethorpe on a trip to England, where he was a big hit as an ambassador for his people. A legend even states that Tomochichi is the originator of Savannah's to-go cup tradition, as he always traveled with Indian firewater in a hand-carved wooden container. Okay, fine. There's no legend like that. But it would be cool if there were. History regards both Oglethorpe, a philanthropist who tried to keep slavery out of Georgia, and Tomochichi in a positive light. Without this early odd couple, the fledgling town would have had a much harder go of it. Washington Square. The most northeastern of Savannah's squares, Washington is a lovely garden in a quiet residential neighborhood. It was named in honor of our first president, who visited the city shortly after his election. Originally the site of the trustees' garden, Washington Square is well cared for, and regarded as one of the most beautiful squares in Savannah. Betrothed couples often choose this as the location for their wedding portraits. In fact, the first time we visited Washington Square, a pair was posing together on the benches, running hand in hand down the sidewalk and throwing bunches of leaves up into the air. I don't know why wedding photographers always instruct couples to act like idiots, but it was fun watching them. Now jump in the air, I love it. Rub your noses together, yas, just like that. Hop on one leg and bray like donkeys. Fantastic. A number of interesting buildings surround Washington Square, such as the International Seaman's House and the Mulberry Inn. An elegant hotel, which started life as a cotton warehouse before becoming a Coca-Cola bottling factory. We pretended to be guests so that we could use the bathrooms. Gentlemen such as Jürgen and myself will only sneak into the finest bathrooms, and this one was pretty good, so, despite our having never stayed there, the Mulberry earns our seal of approval. Fine dining at the Old Pink House. The old pink house on the western side of Reynolds Square was built in 1771 and is the oldest surviving mansion in all of Savannah. Today, it's one of the city's most beloved restaurants and is also home to a popular bar on its bottom floor. The mansion was originally built for James Habersham, who was one of the colonial city's most important merchants. Habersham committed suicide in the basement of this house after discovering that his wife was having an affair with the architect. Because this is Savannah, Habersham's ghost is rumored to still wander the halls. Much of the restaurant's staff claims to have encountered him at least once. We didn't see any apparitions during our dinner at the Pink House, but it's certainly a suitable place for them. Each of the low-lit rooms in this multi-floor restaurant is decked out with original artwork and furniture, and the effect is haunting, especially at night. I felt transported back to the 18th century as we were led to our table. After ordering, I embarked on a little tour of the restaurant to admire the individual rooms. As fascinating as the history is, and as impressive the decor, the best thing about the Pink House is the food. Good Lord. On a recommendation from a friend, I tried the flounder, which was perfectly cooked and covered in a rich apricot sauce. It's one of their specialties, and for good reason. Jürgen had pecan, crusted chicken breast, and we both were given southern specialty sides like collard greens. Everything was delicious. The Planter's Tavern is a bar on the bottom floor of the Pink House, where you'll often find a jazz singer and pianist. It's a cool spot to spend a late, relaxed evening. If you see Habersham's spirit in the seat next to you, do him a favor and act scared. It's not easy being the ghost of an old pink house. Bonaventure Cemetery. Good fortune comes to those who die. Known as one of the most beautiful cemeteries in the entire country, Bonaventure Cemetery is found on the outskirts of Savannah, bordering the Wilmington River across from White Marsh Island. Its name means good fortune, and those buried on its grounds might certainly consider themselves fortunate. There are worse places to rest in eternal slumber. Bonaventure is a place of haunting beauty, where Spanish moss hangs sorrowfully from every tree, casting broken light onto solemn fields of gravestones. The cemetery is large, and one which you could spend hours exploring, discovering tombstones of exquisite craftsmanship and other most notable for their peculiarity. There's one in the form of a broken tree trunk, a grinning marathon runner, obelisks and gates, downcast girls holding flowers, underground crypts, and of course, there's little Gracie Watson. Of all Bonaventure's ghosts, the most famous is that of Gracie Watson. In life, the vivacious daughter of the manager of the Pulaski House had been beloved by neighbors and well known to the hotel's guests, but pneumonia wasn't impressed by little Gracie's charms. Pneumonia snuffed her out at the age of 6. Her grief-stricken father commissioned a statue to mark her grave, and ever since, there have been rumors of the soft sobbing of a little girl in Bonaventure. The statue supposedly sheds tears and screams out at night if a flower has been removed. Besides Gracie, a number of famous people rest their bones in Bonaventure, including Johnny Mercer, Conrad Aiken, and Henry R. Jackson. One statue you won't find there, though, is the Bird Girl statue, which graced the cover of Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. It's been moved to the Telfair Museum of Art for safekeeping. The Scarborough House, Ships of the Sea. On MLK Boulevard near River Street, one of Savannah's most historic houses has been converted into a museum called the Ships of the Sea. The 1819 Scarborough House was designed in the Greek Revival style by architectural wunderkind William Jay, who was responsible for many of the city's best houses of that time period. William Scarborough was an early American from North Carolina who made his fortune in shipping. He was perhaps best known as the mastermind behind the famous SS Savannah, the first steamship to successfully cross the Atlantic. Although it was one of the city's proudest moments, luring even President Monroe to commemorate the occasion, the venture was a commercial failure, and Scarborough fell into bankruptcy. His handsome house was sold off at auction and would serve as both an orphanage and Savannah's first public school for black children, before finally being abandoned and falling into ruin. In 1972, the historic Savannah Foundation stepped in and begun restoration on the house. Keeping in mind Scarborough's line of work, the house was converted into a maritime museum. The ships of the sea boast large-scale model ships and a wealth of information about the lines which operated out of Savannah and famous ships from around the world. I've never been the least bit interested in boats, so I didn't expect the museum to impress me. But it did. We really enjoyed our visit to the Scarborough House, which is just as interesting for its architecture as for the exhibition pieces. The model ships were incredible, their stories interesting, and we loved the collection of nautical equipment in Scrimshaw. We hope you're enjoying our stories from Savannah. If so, please subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss any episodes. And of course, you can read all about this amazing city and admire photos on our blog, savannah.for91days.com.